For example, in the US, when you look at categories, you see that casual games actually dominate, right? And provide the highest reach, right? Across mm-hmm. pretty much across all that formats, with exception of native, maybe. But when you look at India, right? Tools and utility apps and entertainment apps actually dominate.
What can we learn from 24 trillion in-app bid requests? Hello and welcome to Growth Masterminds. My name is John Katsir. I recently saw that Kaizen released a programmatic inventory index. It's based on analysis of 24 trillion bid requests, 630,000 apps, 1.4 billion daily active users, 10 billion machine learning decisions every single day. I am a total sucker for stuff like this because I always think, wow, huge numbers. Most individual marketers don't see anything like this. So I thought I have to talk to these guys and learn what they found out. Here to chat is Tomas Shakachuri, strategic partnerships lead at Kaizen. How are you doing, Tomas?
I'm doing good, John. Thank you very much for having me. I can tell this is a bit surreal. I've been following you for a long time, so being present here, it's very, very weird for me.
Awesome. Looking forward to it. Absolutely looking forward to it. I think I even got your last name right. Did I?
Perfect. I'd say you're slightly Argentinian.
Wow. Well, I like your cuisine. So I'm halfway there.
Nice.
Let's give a bit of an intro. Who the heck is Kaizen?
Cool. Yep. So Kaizen is a self-serve DSP. We're focused on mobile in-app inventory. So Kaizen is built on the principles of control, transparency, and performance. And we combine a modular architecture with performance-based algorithms and a fully transparent SaaS pricing model, providing great flexibility for our customers to bring programmatic buying in-house. So usually our customers range from app developers to mobile-focused agencies and mobile-focused commerce brands.
And of course, I want to get into the report. I want to dive into all the data and everything, but it begs the question. So I'll ask it right now. Why should marketers bring bidding in-house? Who should do that? What's the advantage?
Sure. So when we talk about programmatic in-house, you have two components, right? You have the programmatic component and you have the in-house component. So first of all, about programmatic. Programmatic is a method for buying in-app inventory that guarantees the highest level of transparency and control, while at the same time guaranteeing the same level of reach to all major ad networks combined, right? So that's very important. And so that means that programmatic guarantees the highest level of reach to all users outside of walled gardens, that is. And even that statement, maybe in a few years, it's not going to be true because we already see rumors of Twitter opening up their inventory to programmatic. So the reach for programmatic is even expanding. So that's on the programmatic piece. And then when we speak about in-house, for us, in-house means stepping out of black boxes, right? In-house does not necessarily equate to self-serve, right? Because you can do in-house while still having managed service, for example. But rather leveraging a fully transparent solution, both from a data perspective, but also from a pricing perspective, which is really important, while also keeping control over your campaigns and most importantly, your first party data, right? So you can think of examples like, you know, use cases like user acquisition with organic data or retargeting or even cross promotion, which rely heavily on first party data, right? So having an in-house solution guarantees that you have the same level of performance or even better if you want to, while also maintaining the privacy of your data. And in the case of Kaizen, we provide flexibility for customers' needs in the sense that, hey, do you want a fully self-serve solution? We can provide that. Do you want fully managed? We can do that. And we also can meet somewhere in between with a co-managed solution to help our customers build their programmatic acumen.
It's super interesting because one of the things I've always been thinking about in terms of ad tech is how complex is your ad tech stack, right? How many touches, how many company servers does an impression go through as somebody's bidding on it and somebody's buying it and then when somebody sees it, and how many slices of the ad dollar are taken out at every little iteration through there? And I mean, in different worlds and different places, there's been different estimates of that from 20 cents to 60 cents, right? And so there's something interesting there. I recently chatted with Felix Bradberg, an episode that just published. and he's an AdMon expert, and he was talking about going direct with Moloco, who is a DSP, but they've introduced an SDK, and people getting an 8 to 11% lift in their AdMon revenue, right? So there is some opportunity there. Okay, cool. Enough about that. Let's get into the report. As I said off the top, I'm a sucker for these things. 24 trillion bid requests. Amazing. What were you trying to learn?
Yeah, so what we're trying to do is to provide, the industry with actionable insights on, on their in-app buying, pretty much. And based on what I've said before, right, we spoke about how programmatic really guarantees that level, that high, very high level of reach, and really is a very good approximation to all the in-app inventory that is available outside walled gardens. Jointly that with, the level of transparency that we get, on bid request data, we get a lot of signals in terms of, the device ID, the app placement, contextual data around like Wi-Fi network or cellular network, whatever. There's a lot of data available. So we really set out to exploit that data as much as we could to provide actionable insights to the industry.
What, give us some sense of what ad networks or exchanges all these impressions are coming through.
Yeah, sure. So given that we're a programmatic platform, we work exclusively with ad exchanges. Now, some of these ad exchanges are counterparts to ad networks. So for example, the AppLovin Exchange, the Bungle Exchange, the Digital Turbine Exchange, Unity, IronSource, Charboost, you name it, we have it pretty much. So we base the data on roughly 15 ad exchanges, data for coming from 15 ad exchanges, which pretty much covers the numbers that you gave before, right? 1.4 billion daily active users and so on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Cool. So what was the most surprising thing that you learned?
Oh, the most surprising thing. So first of all, I think in a sense, It's very reassuring when you see data, kind of confirm your already the conceptions that you have, right? So when you look
it's
at
very Google, comforting, right? I wasn't a
it's
total
very comforting. Exactly, totally. So for example, when we look at the global numbers, right? You see, for example, that globally around 1 billion of daily active users that we see globally is coming from Android, and around 400,000 are coming from iOS. Right?
400 million, I'm guessing.
400 million. Thank you. And really Android dominates globally, but it's really very much focused on APAC, right? And within APAC, India is super relevant, which is why we did a specific deep dive in India. But also, for example, in Latin America, right? Then when you look at Europe, the breakdown is usually 2/3 Android, 1/3 iOS. That varies slightly from country to country. But you have exceptions there, for example, like the UK, where iOS is much more prominent, right? And then North America, iOS is, I would say, much more relevant. But for example, that was one of the things, like I always considered the US, for example, a very iOS-centric country. But when you look at the breakdown, just, 56% of the daily active users are coming from iOS devices. So it's not that much tilted towards iOS, right? So the correct statement for that is like, well, US is not very iOS centric, but rather that iOS is very US centric because about 1/3 of the iOS users are in the US.
Interesting. Interesting. Very cool. Different way of looking at it. So you look at a lot of different ad formats. Interstitials and banners were by far the most common ad formats. Why does that matter?
I would challenge that statement, John, depending on the country that you're looking for, right? That you're looking at. For example, one of the things that we did is because we did a breakdown on different countries, like the US, we looked at US, India, and Germany, right? And depending on the country that you're looking at, you can see that actually the app usage of the different users actually varies significantly from country to country, right? For example, in the US, when you look at categories, you see that casual games actually dominate, right, and provide the highest reach, right, across pretty much across all ad formats, with exception of native, maybe. But when you look at India, right, tools and utility apps and entertainment apps actually dominate, In fact, in India, there's a single app, which is called Truecaller, which is an app messaging and caller ID app, right? That actually covers 42% of all daily active users in India. So it's an app with very high penetration. So when you go to India, maybe interstitials and reward are not the ad format that you should be looking at. You should be looking at more than banners and native. But when you go to the US, definitely rewarded and interstitials. Now, when you go to Germany, the Germany market, it's much more, let's say, atomized, where there's no single app category or single app that actually guarantees the highest level of reach. It's everything. There's not a single app that covers 7% of all daily active users, right? So if you're advertising in Germany, you kind of need to go through all ad formats.
Wow. You included one thing in the report that I found super interesting, and you looked at how different apps in different verticals monetize their inventories, and you did a radar chart, sometimes called a spider chart around that, right? And so one of the things I'm looking at right now is that casual games use a lot of interstitials, I believe, if I'm getting my reds and oranges correct. I'll show the chart for people who are watching this on YouTube later, but tell me what you learned about verticals and the way that they monetize from that.
Yeah, so again, this is one of those cases where data ends up confirming what you already knew, right? Because you know, like casual games, you know, especially in gaming, like rewarding interstitial are huge, native is very small. And then banners, depending on the app, may be larger or smaller in terms of the reach. So, this is one of those cases where you see the data and says, okay, this makes total sense, right? This is exactly how the app categories, which I should clarify, the app categorization that we use is Kaizen's own smart app category, taxonomy, right? Which is something that a taxonomy that we created that persists across the app stores. So it's very consistent in that case. And it kind of confirms what we know, right? So going back to what I was saying before, you see those radar charts in different countries and they are completely different, right? India and the US, completely different. So for example, in the US, you mentioned casual games, right? And when you look at casual games, it pretty much guarantees that the radar chart actually covers all the different angles and it's the app category that provides the highest reach, not only overall, but within each of the formats. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, right, when you look at it, it only covers 1/3 of all daily active users in the US. So even if you're saying, hey, casual games actually provide the highest reach, you still need to target as many apps as possible, as many app formats as possible to guarantee the highest reach in the US. You cannot just marry one of those.
Yeah.
In India, you could maybe focus more on entertainment and tools and utility apps because those already cover more than 50%, right? Again, you would do better by covering everything. You should always try to target everything. But if you do something more things tailored towards those app categories, you will find a lot of success and a lot of reach there for sure.
I'll show those for people watching the video, and it is fascinating to see the different types of monetization and how that changes per country. That matters, of course, for apps that are global or at least significantly multinational, maybe not so much for people who are targeting specific countries, which is why you did the deep dives. About the US, anything else that you saw that was super interesting, maybe unexpected, didn't confirm a bias?
Yeah, I mean, from an app category perspective and an app category reach, after casual games, you have entertainment apps, right? And within entertainment apps, we are also including sports apps, right? And there's a, you know, whenever there's a sports season in the US, those start to grow. So for example, with baseball, for example, the baseball season is on. So those apps, like leveraging those seasonal apps is key if you want to maximize reach as well. Something similar happens in the US, in India, with the entertainment category as well, which is the second in terms of reach. But here the situation is different. In India, for example, this is driven by the fact that in India, there are a lot of OTT apps, right? And Indian users, instead of watching these OTT apps on their TVs or whatever, they're very much very used to watching them on mobile devices, right? So they watch streaming apps or whatever on mobile devices. So actually in the entertainment category, like, you know, apps like GeoCinema, like C5, all these different streaming apps, they provide a lot of reach in India for sure. So video, and especially in-stream video in India, is super relevant.
Interesting. I see you've also got like Truecaller as one of the top DAU apps there. Caller ID and Block, VidMate. I didn't even know VidMate, but that sounds entertainment-ish, and being pretty high as well.
Yeah, VidMate is more of a video player app, which, if I'm not mistaken, it's not even available on the Google Play Store, because I think it allows you to, for example, download YouTube videos and stuff like that. So again, India is a country where mobile usage for video watching and everything is huge.
That sounds really interesting, because you got average DAUs for VidMate at almost 54 million here. And for an app that's not even available on Google Play, that's really impressive. I remember looking at India a while ago and seeing that it's a very interesting market, because you have a lot of phones that maybe aren't the newest and have the most capacity. So you'd have installs from people who would just get them off of somebody else via an SD card or something like that, or plugging in. And you get lots of installs, uninstalls from the same app multiple times, because people were switching what they could fit in their storage space. I don't know if that's true anymore.
Yeah, no, that's also the case. I mean, when you look at for example, if you look at India and you look at the breakdown between OSs, you see that Android is huge in India, covering more than 90%, right? So Android is the main device operating system in India. But what's interesting with Android is, like, usually the devices that you see there are not necessarily, you know, flagship devices, but are actually the lower end devices. Mm-hmm. So when you look at, for example, one of the things that we look at also in the index has to do with market price data, right? So we look at price distribution data on the index. And when you start comparing, for example, on the different app formats, Android versus iOS in India, you see that iOS is more expensive than Android, right? Even though, like, Android is the most prominent. And our hypothesis there is that probably that has to do with the fact that, you know, iOS users are probably associated with a higher purchasing power, right? Mm-hmm. So that's why marketers are paying more for those impressions coming from iOS devices.
Also interesting about India, and this will be in an upcoming UA user acquisition trends report that we're releasing shortly. There's actually, and this is just tracking actual paid installs, there's a significant acceleration in iOS paid installs in India in the past couple quarters, which is quite interesting. That's just singular data, and that report will be coming out. It might be out by the time that this goes live. I don't know. Maybe let's hit Germany. You hit Germany as another country you did a deep dive in, and you said that one was different again, right? What did you learn specifically about Germany?
So Germany users are very much concerned about the weather, because you see a lot of weather apps amongst, like, those apps that actually provide the highest reach, right? So Weather Online, or, you know, the Weather Channel, and all these different weather apps. So there's a lot of that. As I mentioned before, there's no single app wins all in Germany when it comes to user reach. So and same can be said about app categories. So it varies very much. So you kind of need to target everything in Germany to guarantee the highest reach. When it comes to, for example, market prices, what we see, it's a similar behavior to what we see in the US, where, you know, iOS is consistently more expensive than Android, right? Especially on high impact formats like rewarded and interstitials. But when it comes to Android, when it comes to low impact formats like banners and native, Android becomes more expensive, right? People are paying higher CPMs for Android inventory all across the distribution curve. Now, when we compare, for example, Germany versus the US on these low impact formats, actually German marketers that are, you know, advertising in Germany are paying more for low impact formats like banners and native in Android than they are in the US, for example. And US is usually, like, the most expensive market out there. But that is not the case in Germany.
But that makes sense. But that makes sense because Germany is a high value market, and people who are buying Android there are probably buying high value, high dollar cost devices. And they have a lot of buying power. And so they spend money in apps and they buy things and everything. So it's a different world where sometimes you think iOS always more expensive, Android always cheaper. Not necessarily true. I mean, also the most expensive phone you can get right now, isn't that a foldable Samsung, which is like $2,000, which is more expensive than the most expensive iPhone you can get, I think. Cool. I want to hit.
There's a bit of a price cap on iOS, right? But in Android, it seems like they can go as expensive as possible because they have so many iterations of different devices and so on. So right. There's no limit to how much they can charge for it.
Right. No limit. Okay. Wow. We'll see. I want to hit scan because you also looked at SKAd Network, which is of course interesting right now, right? It was, we're going through this longest ever transition from scan 3 to scan 4 going on a year plus 18 months or more. And we're still working on it. Had some setbacks in that. We're going forward. But you looked at scan support. SKAd Network support currently sits at 85% of all iOS bid requests is what you've got.
Correct.
That's interesting. Also, you looked at IDFA availability. What'd you learn?
So in terms of IDFA availability, about 25% of all bid requests have IDFA availability available, right? So remember, like IDFA availability and SKAd Network support are actually independent. So you could have bid requests that were IDFA is available because the user opted in, but scan support is there as well, right? So you can run like deterministic attribution there, or you can run SKAd Network attribution. One other thing that, for example, we look at is the support for IDFV, right? So which is the ID for vendors, right? Which is an ID that persists within the same app publisher, but does not persist across publishers, right? So it allows to identify users within a single publisher, but not across publishers. And that's, for example, a very useful signal in terms of programmatic, because that, you know, when IDFA is missing, you can use that, for example, for frequency capping, right? To say, well, I want to show us this many ads to this user in this amount of time, right? And what we see there is that IDFA is available on, for example, on non-IDFA inventory, it's available on 75% of those bid requests, whereas it's only available on 39% of IDFA traffic, right? So it's actually useful that the coverage of IDFA is quite high on non-IDFA inventory because it allows you to do things like frequency capping.
Super interesting. Yeah. Of course, got to be careful about that in France, where that has been the result of recent legislative action and saying that is an identifier that you cannot use for any non-approved uses. I've got to check into the details of that. I looked at that like a month ago. But anyways, if you are using IDFA, take a look at that as well. So super cool report. Where can people get it?
So we've been distributing. So if you go actually on our LinkedIn page, you're going to see probably a post about it of us promoting the index, that's for sure. But they can also go into kaizen.io. They can go into the report section and you can find there you can find our previous iterations for the index, but you can find the latest iteration, the 2023. You just download it. It's free. I would highly advise everyone to go there. One thing that I wanted to add on scan, which I think is relevant, right? Because we were talking about a scan 4.0, is that by July 2023, which July was the last month that we analyzed for the index, support for SKAd Network 4.0 had already reached 50% of all programmatic inventory, right?
Okay.
And some of the main ad exchanges supporting there are Plovin, Unity, Google Ad Exchange, Digital Turbine Exchange, BitMachine. But there's some others that are still not supporting that.
Well, that is really, really interesting. And of course, Singular has a scan for tracker, an SKAd Network tracker, frankly, and we are tracking the adoption trend in terms of not just what inventory is scanned for ready, but how many scan for postbacks are actually being sent as a percentage of all postbacks. Of course, that's set by the ad network, and it only happens under a series of circumstances, device, ad network, and also the model you're running as well. And we are seeing that is trending upwards again. Right now, it's only about 15% of all, and I'm saying this on September 21. Right now, I'm not sure this podcast might air in a week or 2 weeks or something like that. It's at about 15%, but it is on an upward trend right now. The problem, of course, being the conversion value reset bug that we talked about a month ago. Meta had jumped on the Scan4 bandwagon, and we looked like we were heading off the races. Not so much, but at some point that'll start turning up also. Thomas, thank you so much for this time. Really do appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me, John. It's been a pleasure.